Welcome to the Miles to Memories podcast. I'm Sean Coomer, your host, joined as always by Joe Chung from As the Joe Flies and Disney Deciphered. Joe doesn't have any beanies on, no Boston gear on. Well, I guess he does have his high school sweatshirt on, but I have my Boston Red Sox shirt on, so I'm representing the East Coast today, Joe.
Yes, I have my contacts in because after we get off this recording, I'm going to put on my eclipse glasses and go stare at the sun for a little while. A lot of people, I'm guessing that no one cares in Nevada because it's not like close to the path of totality, but a lot of people left town. Like they went to Vermont, they went to upstate New York. It's a big deal over here. My colleague who I work with at Travelmation, she does a lot of work with me. If you're a client, she's probably helped you out, even if you know or don't know that. She said that they canceled school where she lives because they're in the path of totality. It's pretty crazy, this eclipse thing. I was thinking about 2 months ago or maybe a month and a half ago, we talked about those flights by Delta that are like following the path of totality. So people are really excited. I got my glasses ready. We're going to take a break from our kids' piano lesson to go stare at the sun like when it gets to 95% here. Speaking of not wearing a beanie, it's been below 40, like frostbite soccer game on Saturday. It has been freezing here. And today it's 65, clear blue skies, gonna get dark. Pretty excited.
Yeah, it's nice that you got good weather for that. I've been like hearing the opposite side, some backlash against this. And I guess you're right. It probably depends where you are. So here in Las Vegas, I think we're about 55%, which is better than some areas of the country, significantly better than some areas of the country, but obviously not 95, 100%. But I've seen a lot on social media people saying, like, who cares about the eclipse? And I kind of feel weird because it hasn't gotten me excited in any way. I guess, you know, I don't even have glasses, so I guess I'm not going to go outside and look at it, Joe, because I didn't know prior proper planning, so I can't prevent the porpoise performance. But I don't know. I'm not that excited about the eclipse. I feel terrible about it. But I guess, like I said, if I could see the whole thing, then maybe it would be better. But it wasn't something that motivated me to leave town or travel or see it. What do you think that disconnect is? I've seen a lot of people share the same kind of sentiment.
I was thinking about it and I was like, it's just because everyone is talking about it on social media, right? And then there gets to be, I forget if I told you, but I'm like team parent for one of my kids' teams. I think I did say this last week, and we were supposed to have a pizza party yesterday and like half the team left town. And I think there's this like FOMO that builds. And then of course, if FOMO is building, then a backlash is going to build because some people, not everyone who's saying like, I don't care, is going to fall into this category, of course. But some people are going to be like, well, if I'm not going to go, then I don't care. It's just like human nature or whatever. And I think social media has just amplified all of that. And people are so, you know, but we've talked about it so many times, Sean, right? Like people like what they like. Just let them enjoy it. Last episode, we looked up the word for these penumbra nerds. Wait, was it? I can't remember exactly what the eclipse nerds name was. But, you know, people are going to enjoy it. I think it's going to be pretty cool. It's going to be 95% here. So it's going to get pretty dark. And then because it's been dark for like so many days, because like we have not seen the sun until today, which is that's going to add to the effect in like a weird way. And I'm going to walk to pick up my kids from school. That's exactly when it's going to start. And so it'll be cool to see it get dark. I'm not going to, you know, I know people are having eclipse watch parties and they're going to stay outside for the whole 2 hours. I'm not like that, but I still think it's cool. These things don't happen often. And of course, I'm a science teacher. This is what I said to the team. I'm a travel guy. I'm a science guy. How can I deny you the joy of traveling to go see something science related?
It's funny. In the Vegas community, we have something called sour rooters. Those are the people who like watch people gamble, hope they lose so they can steal their machine. I feel like there has to be like eclipse sour rooters who are hoping for bad weather for people, like clouds and stuff, so they can't enjoy it. But I try to think back to like ancient times. What did people think of these eclipses when like the sun was just gone? And, you know, it is sort of magical in that way. If you sort of take out everything we know about stuff and just marvel at the fact that you're going to see this and everything goes to blackness. And it is kind of a cool concept, even though for some reason I'm not getting myself excited about it. I can totally see why the majesty or the, you know, the unique, the wonder of all of it would be appealing to people.
Umbrophile, by the way, I looked it up and we did look it up the other day. I think I was talking to a friend of mine who did go travel for it, and we were actually in the car with our kids and we were listening to Smash Boom Best, a podcast for kids that's like science related. And so, of course, they were doing an episode on the eclipse. I said Smash Boom Best. I meant Brains On. Smash Boom Best is by the same company and we listened to that one more. But Brains On is more like a explaining stuff about science thing. And I will say that it just blows my mind. So they said on that episode that it took hundreds, maybe thousands of years, but like Chinese and Middle Eastern scientists started being able to predict when these total eclipses would happen. And it blows my mind that people were able to do that without computers, without telescopes, any of that stuff. It's the same way that like it blows my mind that we can just slap two engines on a plane and like fly 6 hours and then see each other, you and me, in person, I guess 5 hours to Vegas.
And hope that things don't fall off, right? Off the engines.
Yes, yes. Boeing catching strays. But that blows my mind. And then my friend was like, you know what? It blows my mind that we can still figure that out even with computers, right? Because the universe is like huge and amazing. So, you know, if you're into the eclipse, obviously it happened 4 days ago when you're listening to this. But if you are into it, all the more power to you. We fully support that. It's just so cool that we can understand so much about how the world works now. And yeah, I support it. I'm going to go stare at the sun for a little bit after we're done talking, Sean.
Yeah, big mistake on our part. We should have talked about the eclipse in the past tense to give the illusion that we had recorded this after it, you know, just for a good show.
Once again, technology, you know, technology is amazing. We're recording this in the past, guys. And what we should do is like pretend that we're at the 2026 eclipse in Spain and we're recording into the future. That would be even more amazing.
Time travel, it's a beautiful thing. I think on the last show, and correct me if I'm wrong, I talked a little bit about the fact that Wynn was going to do a status match in Las Vegas, but I did have a chance to go down there and do all of it. So I wanted to kind of update people on how it's all working. Did I actually mention it on the show? I forget.
I think you just said it in passing when we were talking about, I think we were talking about Caesars or whatever. You know, we don't remember these things. Yeah, so I want to hear how that went. You know what? You definitely did talk about it because I think we mentioned like Encore and stuff like that in Boston.
Yeah, that's what I remember too, just mentioning Encore in Boston. Now, unfortunately, it is only at Wynn Las Vegas, so it's not going to help you there, Joe, but it is working really well. So one nice thing about this match, Wynn is matching to platinum status if you have Caesar's Diamond status, which we've talked about ad nauseum. You can get from Founders Card or from the Wyndham Business Earner Card. And you can just walk into Wynn. Now, you need to have a card, a physical card from wherever you're matching from. And they're matching from other Vegas programs too. So I will put a link and you can find out exactly which status you have that would match. But let's just focus on Caesar's Diamond here. You need to make sure you have an expiration date on your card, which, you know, in the past they always did. But I have found that sometimes Caesar's is not printing expiration dates on their card. In fact, we got cards from Cromwell. They did not have expiration dates. I had to go get different cards. And you need a physical card. You can't use an app or a digital version to show them. So just understand that. But other than that, they know what they're doing. It's supposedly through the end of May. We know that status matches can always end early, so do it sooner rather than later if you have the opportunity. But go in there, Caesar's Diamond matching to Wynn Platinum. And you get a $100 spa credit with that, which is kind of cool, and $150 dining credit during your birthday month. Now, this expires at the end of January, Joe, and my birthday was in March, so I'm pretty much out of luck with the dining credit, which I don't think is fair. Come on, Wynn Las Vegas. Help us out for us February and March birthdays. But my wife and I both able to match, get that, and then walk next door to Fontainebleau and match to their gold tier, which you get $150 spa credit, $150 dining credit. You also get waived resort fees and a lot of other perks at Fontainebleau. And then there's other matches too. MGM has their match where you get status for 90 days. So you could potentially parlay the platinum from Wynn into 90 days of MGM gold if you needed waived resort fees or anything there. Hard Rock still potentially has their match as well. So we love all the status match, you know, roundups and going around and doing it in this community. And it does seem like Vegas and the casinos deliver this opportunity more often than other places.
Yeah, I typically like don't chase status, but it feels like something that is good to have just because of all the annoying resort fees, parking fees. Well, I can't keep up for when parking fees are like existing or free or waived or whatever. And, you know, I think I was going to ask while you were talking, I was like, well, what benefit is it to you to match if you don't even really gamble? But then I answered my own question. And I was like, well, if you get all those fees waived, you know, you don't even need to gamble. You can still enjoy it. People can go to Vegas and not gamble and enjoy themselves. We've talked ad nauseum over the last year or so about how Vegas has rebranded itself into an entertainment destination, you know? And so these status matches are super valuable. So thanks for sharing just your experience with that, because I'm sure it'll be helpful to some people.
And it's nice that in this new age of status matches, they're giving the credits too. So, you know, you're getting $150 dining credit at Fontainebleau, with Jasmine and I both going. That's $300 in dining that we have there now. She'll get the birthday credit at Wynn. Wynn also gives you a free cruise for two on Holland America. Although somebody told me you could also do Carnival. On their website, it says Holland America, and I haven't dug into the terms to see. You do need to have two separate stays at Wynn Las Vegas in order to qualify for that, but they could be one-night stays. As a reminder, they're on FHR, which is often a good deal for people with platinum cards and the credits for that. And Wynn's a great place to stay. And then also, just anecdotally, when you do these status matches, you often get much better offers at the beginning, because the idea is they want you to come in and gamble. They don't have a great idea of your rated play or how much you're going to gamble, so they'll tend to give you better hotel offers or other offers sometimes. It's not guaranteed, but it's always a good thing. And most importantly, this was really easy. Both places, they knew what they were doing. They knew the match. You didn't have to ask a lot of questions. They just did it. And that's always the best thing, because I hate status matches when you're, you know, the person doesn't know what they're talking about or they have different rules being applied. Both of these places are doing the match really well, really easy. And then, like I said, right now, MGM has their match too. You know, you really have to earn a lot of tier credits to keep the status with MGM past 90 days. But if you have an MGM stay coming up and you can grab MGM Gold for 90 days and you can save resort fees that way, that could be just a potential way to do this as well. So a lot of opportunity there. Fun times, I think.
Yeah, I think that's pretty good. Now, I had something to update you on, Sean, and that is we talked last episode. I was like looking live about booking a Spirit flight. So I did it. So next two episodes from now, as you're listening to that, I will hopefully be on a Spirit flight between Charlotte and Orlando. And so, yeah, it ended up not being exactly like 50% off, but it ended up being like $450 of savings versus booking a regular American Airlines flight. We got the big front seats, and like on AA, we would have had to be in the back. Because I don't have any status with them, so I couldn't even get like the preferred seating that, like, I would have had to pay for a quote unquote preferred seating, which is just like further up, not to even mention like having more space. I did end up getting three bags. I like did the mental math and I was like, we're gonna need that. One thing I learned, we were discussing yesterday and I didn't know about Spirit, like the checked bag fee varies based on the route that you're taking. I'm not sure how they calculate it. And it makes me wonder if it's like a demand thing, like a supply and demand thing. So I can't remember exactly what the number I gave you or we were talking about last week, but it was like, we were like thinking, oh, is the check bag like $40? Sorry, not check bag, carry-on bag, $40. But I had to pay $57 per carry-on bag. But still, with all that, the carry-on bags, the seats for myself and my kids, four big front seats for myself and my kids, hundreds of dollars saved over flying AA. So looking forward to trying something new. My son is like he's the one who's always asking if we're going to fly in first class. And I'm like, dude, we're flying to Charlotte. Like, what do you think that even means, man? Like he just doesn't get it. So I'll be curious to see his impression of Spirit Airlines, because he thinks about these things a lot. Too much for an 8-year-old, let me say.
You got to tell him you're in first class. That's what the big front seat is.
I know. So, am I further ruining him? Yeah. Great point.
Yeah, he'll tell everybody at the gate, I'm in first class, and they'll do that. You know, it's funny you talk about, you know, capitalism 5.0 or wherever we are in the world, and surge pricing and things costing different. You know, in the world of amusement parks, it's been that way for a while. Like Disney, they charge different ticket prices depending on the day. JetBlue just announced, your beloved JetBlue, that they're going to charge different bag fees depending on demand in the day. So like the age of like a flat fee for anything is seemingly gone. And I'm sure that all the other airlines are going to move in this direction. So if you're already paying more for a ticket on a high demand day, you're going to pay even more for your bag and everything else, I'm sure.
Wow, I totally missed that. Was that today or maybe a couple days ago? I mean, I had a pretty busy weekend, so.
Yeah, so I think they're limiting it up to $50 for your first check bag. It would be the highest, $70 for the second one. But peak dates are like half the year and most of the summer season and holidays and all of that. $35 for off-peak is the cheapest, depending on your status. So whatever your status is, you might get something included. You might get something cheaper, depending on the fare you book, then depending on the day. It's so kind of mind crazy. And then if you do it within 24 hours of departure, they're charging $10 more. So many gotchas. It feels like Spirit Airlines.
Man, I mean, speaking of things that we talk about ad nauseum on this podcast, the further complication of things for consumers, I mean, that's where they're making all this money. And, you know, we talked about it last week when I was on the Spirit website and I hadn't booked it yet, just how like there were so many like pop-ups and like add this, add that, rental car, check bags, seat, early priority boarding. Oh, you know how they got me, Sean, is it's so weird. If you pay for a carry-on bag, you get priority boarding, like so zone 2 boarding. I mean, whatever. But I figure there's probably not a ton of zone 1 Spirit Airlines people, right? So you get zone 2 boarding for a carry-on bag, but there's 4 of us. And I'm like, okay, so they're like paying an extra $10 for your 4th, so you don't have to leave your 6-year-old kid in zone 4 or have to board with her. So, you know, I feel like the overcomplication of things and just all these add-ons, I mean, obviously that's why all these airlines are making money. Although I did see a rumor from John NYC this weekend that Delta is going to be the only airline to post a positive revenue in Q1. So I guess we'll see, you know, maybe that's why all these airlines have to do it even more to get into the black.
Well, they should just follow Delta's lead and just don't publish these prices, right? That's what they're going to do. That's the next step. Don't say it's $10 more to do this or these days are peak and off peak. They'll just have no pricing and then it'll just depend on like kind of like what you ran into with Spirit. I expect that'll be the thing. The budget carriers use the zone boarding. That's how they quickly know whether you paid for a carry-on, by the way, for people. That's why you get zone. They know if you're in zone 2, you have a carry-on, and if you're in zone 4 or whatever the zone is that you don't, and that's how they're easier, like able to sort of enforce stuff. But yeah, that is sort of messed up to like pay for your kid that didn't have a bag. I wonder if you had just taken them in, if they would allow you to do that in the line, but you know, it is a budget carrier, so who knows? And you know how those surly gate agents can be. So I wouldn't take that chance.
And you know, like how they get you too is like, it's like, oh, I saved $400 over American Airlines. It's just an extra $10 to add her, you know, and people have listened to this podcast enough. You know, I'm not like penny pinching, right? And so it's like, okay, another $10. Yeah, could I actually don't think I could talk my way into it. It just opens up too big of a can of worms for, and which I get for like the gate agent, but it's like, you know, they just throw it out there. It's like an extra $10, extra $10 in Spirit's coffers. And so maybe they're a little bit less in the red in Q2, thanks to the Chung family.
I think that's the direction we're heading though. I'm serious with all the airlines. They started with the basic economy. Remember a few years ago, none of the legacy carriers had basic economy. Now they all do. And, you know, we have so many fees. And I feel like 5 years from now, every website is going to look like Spirit's website, Joe, with 8 million upsells. I mean, they're already getting more and more and more. Now we're getting surge pricing. I mean, like I said, it's capitalism 5.0. It is the way of the world. It's not just in the airline industry. It's everywhere, maximizing profits, maximizing everything. And also, understanding customer behavior, understanding that you're going to pay that $10. People like you, and they get that now, and they don't want to leave it on the table. And, you know, so you got to sort of pick and choose your battles. I probably wouldn't have paid the $10, if I'm being honest, just to kind of give a counterbalance. I don't think there's anything wrong with it, but I always like to live dangerously, or I'll just leave my kid and let her board later, Joe. No, actually, I would probably switch, and I would be the one boarding later, because you do have assigned seats with Spirit. If it was Southwest, it'd be a different story, but yeah, I mean, there's no right or wrong answer. And I'm sure there's things where, you know, you try to save a dollar because it makes sense to you and other places where it doesn't. And I think that that's good in this hobby. There's too many people who are trying to shame other people for, you know, wanting to save something or spending when they don't. And we know people who take crazy trips. They go eat at really expensive restaurants because it means something to them. They save money on their flights or hotels with points, but they spend a lot of money and they see this as a discount on what otherwise they wouldn't be able to do. And I'm the same way. Like I pay a fraction of what I did, but I do pay cash when I have to. And you know, it takes all kinds in this hobby. It doesn't have to be, we don't all have to be the cheapskates, the stereotypical travel hacker.
Enjoy your eclipses. Enjoy your fine meals. Enjoy your Spirit Airlines. We are very consistent here on the Miles to Memories podcast. That's a good point, though. I think if Jess was there and there was five of us and we only did three check bags, it makes a ton of sense. I mean, I don't know why I keep saying check bags, carry-on bags. It makes a ton of sense. Sure, like we have seats, so it's fine. Board with zone two, the people who have the carry-on bags. The only reason why, I care about boarding any semblance of early is to make sure I have carry-on overhead luggage space. And so the three people with the carry-on bags are boarding early anyway. They put their stuff in the, I wonder if the overhead bins in Spirit are like less, maybe it's less of a thing just because of the whole Spirit of it all. I guess I'll find out on this flight, but you know, that is a viable strategy. And then the other two just board in zone four, or zone five, like who cares? You have your seat and you're not fighting for overhead space anyway. I mean, I'd love to, if they could, Sean, this is what they're going to do. They're going to charge you for a specific overhead cabin, right? And then if I knew specifically which overhead bin is allotted to me, then I would happily board as late as possible.
I have found on the low-cost carriers that the bins tend to fill up less frequently. And a lot of times they charge less for a check bag than a carry-on bag. So the carry-on, for some reason, is a premium. So I have found that they tend to be less full. I'm like you. I get on early purely to get my carry-on up because I'm very tall and having a bag underneath my feet is not a good idea. I usually travel with a carry-on suitcase and a backpack, and I do everything I can to get the backpack up with the small carry-on, and that way I don't have anything at my feet. But I would absolutely be the last one on the plane if I didn't have to worry about that. There is no reason I would go sit on a plane for 30 or 40 minutes while people brush by me. I would be the last person on there if I didn't have to worry about that. And I kind of am jealous of people who don't care, or they bring a small bag and, you know, they just stuff it under and they're happy with that, because I hate the boarding process so much. You know, it's just an extra tedious amount of time, but I do it purely because of the carry-on and not wanting to have to gate check or be the person stuck, you know, in that position. So yeah, it's funny, all these little things, all these games that we play, the pains that we put ourselves through to save other pains, you know?
Yeah, which I should add, you know, we just came back from Disney and then we're going to Charlotte in like a couple weeks. My wife was like, "Do you ever think we're traveling too much?" And I was like, I mean, yeah, in one sense, like it's tiring to get ready. Like we were joking, I put the suitcases away. She's like, "You're going to take those out in 1 week, like literally 1 week." By the time we're not a, I don't know, Sean, are you a get all the suitcases unpacked in a way like the day you get home type of person?
No, it's usually when we do laundry. So it's not always right away. But yeah, usually, and I should admit, it's usually Jasmine who is like throwing everything pretty organized, dirty clothes, all that. But usually she'll go in there and pull everything out and wash it. And great, great wife, great woman. Shout out to Jasmine.
Always. Well, like she was like, you shouldn't even have unpacked. That's what she was saying, basically. Like there was no point for us to unpack. And I was thinking that, yeah, I mean, we do travel a lot. Obviously, we are privileged to be able to travel. And then miles and points, like you were saying, helps that and dulls the cost of that. But at the same time, I was thinking, you know, Leslie said this on Disney Deciphered, like her kid is going to be a junior soon. So she's like counting summers, right? Or maybe a sophomore. I can't keep track. I barely know how old my own kids are, right? But you're like counting summers. You're counting the time you have together. Like for you, Sean Reese is already out of the house. You know, Ellie only has so much time left to travel with you guys. Like it freaking sucks in a lot of ways, but at the same time, because we can travel, you know, we're going to do it. And then like both sets of grandparents, they seem to be very much in the, we're going to go see as much of the world as we can while we can. You know, I think I mentioned that my mom's hip has been giving her issues. So like she was a little slower at Disney World and stuff like that. And, you know, they're all retired now. And so I was like, yeah, Jess, you know what? We probably are traveling more than we need to, but at the same time, let's do it while we're healthy, while the kids still like us. Like they still will talk to us and they still think we're cool. Well, my 11-year-old doesn't think we're cool anymore, but you know what I'm saying? Like it's getting there, right? So, you know, we might as well travel with them, and really thankful for Miles and Points to help us to do that. Like we're staying in you know, we're staying in points in Charlotte at a Hyatt Place, flying down with JetBlue. You know, it just makes things so much easier. Only paying the cash for the Spirit Airlines flight.
Yeah, it's absolutely right. Travel, like, I feel like we're preaching to the choir here, but I've said this before, I'll say it again. Your life is of a bunch of seasons. And, you know, thinking you're going to travel five seasons from now when you're old, and then you're going to have the same experience you would have now as a young family, or, you know, potentially if people are in their 20s and they don't have a family and they can travel then, they'll all have different experiences than when they do have a family than when they're older. And, you know, I have family members, including my dad, who wishes he traveled more, and he's not getting around so well. And he's constantly asking me to bring him places, very exotic places that are difficult for me to go with him. And, you know, you just wish that people had more experience. And I don't feel like either one of us have had any shortage of travel. And, you know, when it's tiring, we've talked about jet lag, all this stuff. I'm reminded of the cool stuff and the reasons that we do it. And yeah, my daughter's 9. I can't believe she's 9. And before I know it, I'll blink and she'll be 18. And, you know, she won't want to travel with us, or she won't be able to travel with us. We already went through that with one kid. It's life. And it's great. It's rewarding to show your kids the world. And the thing I've also been talking about forever is people underestimate children and what they can do when it comes to travel, what they can see, how it opens their mind. You know, they just, I only want to take my kid on a weekend trip because they get too cranky or whatever. And yeah, sometimes you have to deal with that as a parent, but in the end, like, it really does open them up to so much more than if they just stayed at home and didn't see anything else, you know, on so many levels. I think kids who travel are cool. And parents are pretty cool for putting up with all that too, because it's not always easy, Joe. It's not always easy to travel with a kid. And I can't imagine traveling with four kids. Like, oh man.
Well, I only have three.
I have three. Oh my God.
No, it's
okay. The five numbers. Oh man.
No, it's Jess is the one who travels with four kids. But I don't know if Ellie's there yet. And obviously Sean Reese is there. But we are basically at the point where one kid, she just completely packs herself. We give her a packing cube, and I'm just like, give me the cube. I'll put it in. Done. Second kid packs himself completely, but I will do like a verbal check with him. And then the third kid, she packs herself. And our kids didn't do it when they were six, but because her older siblings do it, you know, she does it too. Plus, she's the kid who cares the most about what she wears and stuff. She packs her stuff, but then we like physically check it. Man, what a game changer to have kids packing for themselves, which is a good life skill. I like, they're going to start going to camp soon. They got to learn how to do their own laundry, like all that stuff. I mean, actually, the older kids do know how to do the laundry already, but you know what I'm saying. So life skills that, you know, the school of hard knocks, traveling all around the world in fancy first class seats if you're my son.
Yeah, absolutely. And the skill of being able to do laundry in a hotel room sink, invaluable to their lives. They will be able to live anywhere, do anything, and wash their clothes in the sink. And that is the lessons that we teach our kids while traveling. So there are a few miles and points related stories. Hilton this week announced that they are acquiring Sedell Group. Now, for people who don't really know what Sedell Group is, they are the owners of Nomad Hotel. The one in London, I think, is the original. There's one in Las Vegas that's owned by MGM. And this is actually bad news because Hilton is acquiring the Nomad brand. They want to spread it all around the world. Nomad is probably my like biggest recommendation or pick for Las Vegas because I just love the brand and it's so very different and quirky. Unfortunately, the Las Vegas location, because of MGM's partnership with Marriott, will not be a Nomad hotel anymore starting in a couple of months. But the good news is Hilton is going to spread this brand up to 100 locations around the world. This is a really cool brand, a higher-end kind of catch for Hilton, and one I'm excited about, even though in Las Vegas we're losing Nomad.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool. Have I been to the Nomad in Las Vegas? It's weird. So they're just going to rebrand it, and I guess that makes sense. But we've seen all these bigger chain resorts adding these smaller groups to their portfolio. Speaking of capitalism 5.0, but I think at least for us as a consumer side, and that's probably why we tolerate capitalism 5.0, it just gives us more options to use our Hilton points. And, you know, Hilton, I feel like it's never talked about, right? Because everyone in this space gushes about Hyatt, fairly or unfairly, right? Everyone dumps on Bonvoy, fairly or unfairly. And then Hilton is just kind of like the ignored. Even stuff like, you know, I don't know if we're going to get to it, but we have Benji's article about choice privileges, like the niche ones, they get more kind of played. But Hilton is just kind of, it's the middle child of all the hotel programs. So I'm glad to see that they're adding to their portfolio. And, you know, every time I've used my Hilton points, like, I've been happy. You can get value, and they already have such a large portfolio, and adding Nomad is just going to make it even better, and also have nicer branded properties, like, you know, kind of similar to, I mean, it's not at the level of Conrad, but
yeah, I'm a big fan of Hilton, even though I probably don't talk about him enough. Benji does talk about Hilton a lot on the site, and he is a huge, that's his number one program. Hilton has been my number two program, I would say, for quite a while. And there's a couple of reasons. They have a great credit card portfolio, easy to get their status. And people will say, well, Hilton gold or diamond status isn't worth much in the U.S., especially, you know, with the changes for the credit. But it is a credit that you're getting every day. But internationally, club access, you're getting upgrades. You get treated really well, especially in Asia and elsewhere. It's fairly easy to accumulate their points. Those free night certificates are amazing, great values. You know, I use them, we talked about on the show, at the Waldorf in Cabo, for example. That's a very popular one where you can get a hotel that's going for $1,000 or more a night. And in my case, despite all the problems that we had there, you know, we got a two-bedroom villa that was $2,500 a night simply as an upgrade, as a diamond. And that's just insane. So there's a lot of value with Hilton. I think that they have a lot going on. I'm actually going to be talking to Hilton executives in a couple weeks. I'm interested to hear more of their takes on the future of the program and what's going on. And I'll be able to share that after I go talk to them. So I'm excited for that opportunity and to cover it more. But yeah, they're making moves, huge portfolio. It's Hilton. Like, yeah, you're right. It's sort of like a safe sort of move. And I don't know, Hyatt just gets more attention for some reason. I do think Hyatt Globalist is a better status than Hilton Diamond, but they don't have the portfolio, and there's a lot of reasons to love Hilton. Don't be ashamed if that's your program. You're absolutely not doing anything wrong.
Hilton, the Jan Brady of hotel programs, and you know, Hyatt, the Marsha, obviously.
All right, another story. Global Entry is finally going up in price, Joe. It's been 15 years. They haven't raised the price. So it's going from $100 to $120. And then Nexus, which is the Canadian program, is going from only $50 to $120. And then Century, another similar program, is actually going down from $122.50 to $120. So I guess they're standardizing the pricing for all of these at $120. I believe the credit cards are going to follow up with this and continue to provide the credit. But I don't know that we have exactly confirmation on that from all the credit card companies, the banks. But I would assume they're going to give you the credit. They advertise, you know, basically making Global Entry free. I would assume they're going to up it to 120 on your credit cards, but I haven't seen any confirmation on that yet.
My first thought was $20. I feel like I would pay $120 for a Global Entry, even if I had to pay it myself. Obviously, I could, I mean, I'm still, you know, you're all like, all of us are like always trying to give away our Global Entry fee waivers and stuff, right? So we're not in that situation. Although I have 5 family members, so I get through them pretty quickly. But like for $120, TSA PreCheck is 85 or whatever. Maybe it's 90 or 100. I don't even know. But like the extra that you have to pay over TSA PreCheck. Now, the one thing that has changed from when Global Entry first came out is with just the advent of technology, you get through customs so much faster, like passport control and all that. Especially if you're an American, I mean, well, duh, if you're getting Global Entry, it's as like a U.S. resident, right? It is so much faster. And so there's a little bit less of a benefit there, but just to have it, just in case, you never know when things are going to get backed up at passport control and stuff like that. I didn't even realize that it was 15 years old, but if you put it like that, like an extra $20, I mean, I can live with it. They're probably still losing money on the program doing it anyway. And the Nexus, I don't use Nexus, but I have a friend who travels to Canada like every month for work, and he says Nexus is super smooth and easy as well. So probably good value there. At least I'm sure he's going to pay for it.
It really is amazing how Global Entry's sort of grown over the years. Even like 5-6 years ago, the old kiosks would pretend to do a facial recognition on you, but they actually weren't connected to anything. So they were just basically taking
what?
The passport picture that was scanned in. They weren't connected to a database. So they were taking the passport picture scanned in and trying to compare it to that, but they weren't like going in and comparing it to their actual database. And then you actually still had to answer all your customs questions on the kiosk. If anybody's done Global Entry lately, all you do is walk up. It scans your eyes, it knows who you are, and then you walk out. Like, there's an officer there, and he tells you if you're good to go or if you have to stop, and you literally go. That's all you do. It takes 5 seconds. It's amazing, and you don't. It knows who you are. You don't have to scan a passport. You don't have to do anything. So they, you know, they charge $20 more, but they made the tech good, which I'm very excited about. That's a conspiracy theory, Joe. I'm not going to say I 100% know that, but I was told by quite a few people that back in the day, they weren't actually connected. They were comparing the static photo from your passport to the photo of you there in real time, but they didn't have any database, like the actual picture they have on file of you.
Yeah, I don't even know which is worse. Like, do I want to be in the database? Yeah, the thing I was wondering last time I went to Global Entry is like, I don't remember scanning my eyes the first time. So is it like, at Disney World, you have to put your fingerprint down? And I've been assured, and once again, I don't know, that like they don't actually save your fingerprint. They like convert it into some sort of encrypted number or something like that, and they test it again. But when I went through Global Entry, I mean, I've gone through a couple times recently. I was like, the first time I went through, it's like, how do they know who I am from my eyes? Maybe the second time they got my eyes the first time, but, you know, it was confusing.
Yeah, I don't know if it's specifically just using eyes or the whole face. Basically, you just walk up. I mean, it just recognizes you in a second. It's crazy good tech compared to like what it was. No more fingerprints. I forgot you had to do the fingerprints back in the day. They sucked.
Did you, like when Ellie was a baby, did you like, you know, the whole fingerprint was like a whole problem when the kids are, I mean, honestly, until they were like 6 or 7 or 8 years old, it was a huge problem. Now we only have one kid who we had to lift up to the camera. And then, of course, it picked up the parent's face by mistake. So we had to go talk to customs anyway. But, you know, it was still super fast. So, yeah, I love Global Entry. And I don't see any reason to not have it, even though I think regular passport control is pretty similar these days for U.S. citizens and permanent residents.
Yeah, just depending on the line. And you're right. It's just the whole process of getting back in the country, at least for Americans, is a lot easier and better and continues to get better. And they've invested in technology, and that is good. And yeah, you haven't lived until you've tried to fingerprint your baby for Global Entry, which doesn't work because they don't have fingerprints. So every time you go, you have to go see an officer. We had to do that for Ellie's first term of Global Entry, but when that renewed, they were able to get her fingerprints on file, and then we didn't have that flag anymore. And I still have to hold her up, though. She's not that tall, but I do make sure to like hold her in front of my face. And yeah, it's all fun. But, you know, technology, this is a case where technology is getting better. And this is such a stressful thing coming back into the country. I don't know about for other people, but for me, it is. Not because I've done anything, not because it's just, I don't love going through border control in any country. But I've dealt with some kind of, you know, some interesting officers over the years. And if they could just make it easier and better, I know I'm not bringing anything wrong. I know I'm not doing anything wrong. So I can just get through, and I'd love it. I think it's been great. And all my recent experiences have been wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, it used to be stressful just even if, like, just standing in line used to be so stressful. And for Global Entry or for even regular citizens, it's just so much smoother now. Yeah, it's a real, I mean, again, this is it, like, we're privileged to get to travel, but it's also become, like, so much easier than when we were kids and stuff.
So a couple of quick deals before we go. There is a new Amex offer for Carnival Cruise Line for all the cruise lovers out there. $150 statement credit on $750 spend. So that's like 20% off. Not a bad deal if you're looking to do a Carnival cruise. Carnival makes it super easy to split up your payments as well. So, you know, you can stack multiples of these, you know, different offers, different plays. There's a lot of different ways to do it, but a pretty good deal on that, especially if you like, you know, Carnival. Which I know you love Carnival, Joe, even though you've never been on one of their ships.
I've booked quite a few Carnival cruises. Fun fact, they are like the cruise line whose casino incentives, like, they play the best with travel agents. So, you know, I've had not the free cruises, but I've had multiple clients, mostly Miles to Memories listeners, actually. Like, they get targeted casino offers, and I'm able to book that for them, no problem. And, of course, you know, when you're booking through an agent, you can use your Amex card and still get the bonus and stuff. So it works out really well. So Carnival, not the highest revenue cruise out there, but it's pretty great. Which, by the way, I just want to reiterate, since we said it like a month or two ago, the Icon of the Seas prices on Royal Caribbean are insane. Like, they're beyond Disney Cruise Line prices.
Can we talk for just a brief second about that Atlantic hit job on Icon of the Seas? Did you read that?
Oh, I didn't. What, like, was it let me guess. Was it about how they're ruining the environment, which is probably somewhat true? Or is it about how it's like just a monstrosity? Or was it about how it's like too many people or like the end of civilization as we know it, Wally or something like that?
So this is the Atlantic, and you know, that skews a certain way, I guess, politically, you would say. And it was really about how all cruise people are right-wing, redneck people. That was sort of the premise of it all. But you could tell the author...
First of all,
he's a well-known writer, well-known author. Cruising. He was just very pretentious, and he made up his mind before he went there that he was going to do a hit job on the cruising industry, and he made it seem like he was going to a zoo, and he was this like above the fray observer of all the animals at the asylum. And you should really read this, Joey. It really blew up all over social media. Of course, anybody who likes cruising was totally triggered by it. There's parts of the article that are funny and witty. You know, he writes in that sort of David Sedaris, that sort of like thing. But there's times where you could tell he thought of the punchline before the joke and he's working towards it. I just don't understand how he could go. But basically his whole premise was he was lonely. He was crying himself to sleep. He was on this ship full of animals. I don't know. I mean, he thinks way too much of himself. I have been triggered, never been triggered enough. But I will admit there were parts that were funny. There were parts that were well-written and other parts that I didn't enjoy. Maybe we'll talk a little bit more about it next week and you can read the article because, you know, as much as you're into cruising and talking about it, I'm surprised nobody sent it to you this week.
Well, I don't know if you know, Sean, but I've been mostly off of Twitter and that has helped my mental health for sure. But I do miss stuff like this when people are dumping on a guy who was dumping on something of his own. I will say that you're crying yourself to sleep alone on a cruise, buddy. Put an upside down pineapple on your door and you'll probably be fine.
Of course, he makes reference to upside down pineapples on doors as well, which I think is an urban myth because all my times on a ship. Now, I do not do that. I am not of that lifestyle. But I certainly, because everybody talks about this, I look for these upside down pineapples. Never seen one, Joe. And don't tell me you haven't ever, like, you know, when you're walking down the hall, you're looking at all the doors on these different cruise lines. They have decorations, right? People are celebrating their anniversaries. They decorate all this stuff. And that's what I'm talking about. I've never seen an upside down pineapple on a cruise ship. I'm sure they exist, maybe not on Carnival or Royal Caribbean or Norwegian, the cruise lines I've gone on. But even like on Virgin, there was lots of decorations, but no upside down pineapples. I know that this is going to bring me all kinds of terrible feedback that I'm looking for this, but I promise not for that reason. But everybody loves to say this. Every article about cruising, this has become like that urban myth, I think.
Oh, man. Sometimes I wish we were on video because I'm cracking up so much. Dude, you just got to check out Donald's cabin on Disney Cruise Line, man. That guy's a freak.
Yeah, Donald with his upside down cruise line. All right, last thing, because this is a good deal that a lot of people take advantage of. Selling gift cards can be very lucrative in this. Target Circle's having their week, a lot of big discounts, but 10% off Target gift cards April 13th. So look for that. It's not as easy as it used to be to scale these up, but a lot of people shop at Target anyway. It's rare to be able to get 10% off, usually only once or twice a year. So, you know, if you're a Target lover, pick up some 10% off gift cards on April 13th.
Yeah, that looks good. And really quickly, because I mentioned it, and, you know, we've run out of time to talk about it. Benji article on booking preferred hotels with choice privileges points. It wasn't the smoothest process for him. He ran into a couple of bumps in the road, but still, as always, another good option and sometimes worth the hassle. So we'll link that in the show notes and you can check that out.
Yeah, and thanks to Benji for continually, you know, thinking outside the box, like we said, bringing this. And there are a lot of interesting properties under this choice program. And he's not so happy that a lot of them you can now book more than 100 days out. He has some qualms because he really likes that program and some of the niche, but there are some interesting properties, including, you know, in Vegas, Green Valley Ranch, Red Rock, but all over the place. Anybody who thinks choice is just low end at this point, it's not. There's a lot of value with transfers from different partners, and now there's some really good properties to book. This should definitely be on your radar as a hotel program. Never going to be probably your first hotel program, but you should definitely have it on your radar. And Benji's doing a great job of continually covering it. And as Joe said, we'll put a link in the description. But that's going to do it for this week's episode. Joe, where can people find you when they're not listening to this fine podcast?
You can find me at As Joe Flies all over social media. Joseph Chung at travelmation.net for your Disney cruise and other travel needs. What about you, Sean?
at Miles to Memories all over social media, youtube.com/Miles to Memories for our MTM Vegas show. And then everything we do, posts, podcasts, videos at milestomemories.com. Thanks in advance for 5-star reviews on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. If you like the show, we really could use some new 5-star reviews. That would help us out a lot. Have a great week. Thanks so much for listening. Talk to you next time.
See ya.